This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9 is celebrating the International Day of Happiness, presented by UEM Sunrise.
It's 6:38 on the evening edition with Kelvin and Hezriel. Okay, for our next story, we are shifting gears. It's been a tough few weeks for everyone, and I think we could all use just a little break. So, we're observing the International Day of Happiness on the show today. First, by looking at the term gross national happiness, made famous by Bhutan, and then by looking at the science of happiness.
Right, so first up, the GNH Index, or the Gross National Happiness Index. It's a philosophy and measuring tool from Bhutan introduced by its former king, Jigme Sangyi Wangchuk. And essentially, it's a holistic approach to sustainable development that lends equal weight to both human and economic progress.
Yep, so how it works is that the country runs a survey every 5 years that measures 9 key areas of happiness. The areas are psychological well-being, health, education, good governance, ecology, time use, community vitality, culture, and living standards. Not a very short list, and it's also not a short survey, by the way. It used to take up to 9 hours, but they managed to shorten the survey to just 3 hours in the most recent run. The next one is due to run this year.
So it sounds like because happiness and well-being is already a focus in the country, it would translate into world rankings, right? Well, that's not the case. In the 2019 World Happiness Report, they ranked 95 out of 156 countries. Bhutan's position reflects the country's poverty level and the socioeconomic challenges the country faces. But despite the contradiction in rankings, what's clear is their vision for their country. And that's really a big step in the right direction.
Yeah, so I think we've seen some other countries perhaps take up this step, right, in including well-being or prioritizing the well-being and happiness of people as a measure instead of GDP. You know, that's also happening specifically in New Zealand. We talked about that last year, right? And it's really a drive now that perhaps an understanding now that we've sort of twisted GDP to and tried to use it to fit in ways where it doesn't, right? That it can't necessarily measure some amount of economic progress, but you know, does it? And it's sometimes also used as a way to measure if society is progressing. I don't think the GDP is doing enough. And I think economists and countries and leaders as well are realizing that it's not enough.
On another note, I'm not really surprised that Bhutan ranked 95 out of 156 on the countries on the report because, get this, there's research that points out that perhaps money can buy you happiness because, for instance, the country that did place at the top of the list was Finland. And it's really not hard to understand why, because it has a strong social safety net, including a progressive agenda to ending homelessness. It's got a high education system. The commitment to closing the gender gap is there. And it's actually the only country in the developed world where fathers spend more time with their children in school, their children who are going to school, than mothers are. So there's research to suggest that countries, you know, over the last 200 years, there's research that's been carried out where countries' level of happiness tends to correlate with, economic prosperity. Now, of course, it's more of a collective sort of environment, but it's interesting to note how, you know, this wealth is somewhat correlated to happiness.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But it's not just that one dimension, right? Mm. You have to include whether, well, are you doing okay in terms of your mental health? And a lot of things could factor into how your mental well-being is, right? Are you stressed from the fact that you are worried that the next month you might not be able to have a roof over your head? You know, how are you going to pay for your next meal? And if you don't, if you don't have those as worries, right, that's one stress that you can take away, not think about if you have stability and you can just sort of focus on the other things in your life. So in the meantime, you can let us know how you are finding moments of happiness at this point in time. We followed up with former Deputy Defense Minister Liu Chin Tong earlier on WhatsApp to ask him how he's keeping busy at this point in time. He says he is writing, reading, and warning people about the dangers of going the Italian way.
Yeah, so maybe the happiness part is more of the writing and reading.
Yeah, I think more focused on that. We are marking International Day of Happiness today. We are first up looking at the Gross National Happiness Index. And we're now going to cross over to Michael Frank, Senior Analyst of Public Policy at the Economist Intelligence Unit. Michael, thanks for being on the show.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
First of all, could you give us your understanding of what the Gross National Happiness Index is and tell us how it came about?
The index is it's a methodology that we're very familiar with at the Economist Intelligence Unit. We do benchmarking indices all the time, whether it's be familiar with some of our work on cost of living or livability. It's a methodology we're very familiar with. For Gross National Happiness, they assess 9 different domains and 33 different indicators across those domains. And they're looking at factors like psychological well-being, health, education, good governance, living standards, and related topics. And what they're doing is going out every 5 years, doing a survey of the population and asking people questions that relate to these indicators and getting a sense of how the country is making progress.
Is Bhutan the only country in the world that doesn't only use GDP to track its economic progress?
Well, to my knowledge, Bhutan is the only one that specifically tracks happiness. And I think it's great. I mean, I think a lot of countries are starting to branch out a little bit more and recognize that GDP, the limits of GDP and in measuring the modern lifestyle of their citizens. But yeah, I think that what I really like about Gross National Happiness is it is to me the antidote to some of the concerns, the populist concerns that you see arising all over the world that I think are related to capitalism and particularly the negative effects of consumerism and its relative materialism. I think Gross National Happiness is a good antidote to that.
Right. And on that note, because it is a departure from what is standard, you know, not using and moving away from the GDP as a goal, how does the GNH work? And is this something that's easy to comprehend and measure?
I would argue to some extent, the goal is just changing the national consciousness around what defines national success. And in that sense, you can argue that it has already been successful, that this is something that my impression is Bhutanese people are very proud of, rightfully so. It is an impressive achievement. And so much of this is reorienting the public discourse around what national success looks like. I think if you're looking at, okay, are we going to improve happiness, that is a tougher that's a tougher task. You know, you got to consider how much do you expect this to improve over time? What should the comparison be? Did you compare to other countries? What is your true benchmark? I think those metrics are more amorphous. So, you know, if you look at, for example, the results of Bhutan's Gross National Happiness Index in the 2015 survey, which was published in 2016, it looked like the index score was basically flat. It only grew by a little bit more than 1%. I don't think that that's a reason to be be unhappy with the results. It's really unclear to me what your benchmark should be. What are you comparing yourself against? So even just getting the shift in public discourse to focus more on happiness as opposed to GDP, I think that is a success in and of itself.
So other than that, what are the advantages and limitations to using GNH as a measuring tool for economic progress?
Well, the advantage is if you look at their index framework, is that these are all good goals for the government to have, and policies should be oriented around these domains. It's fairly comprehensive, but you know, as I mentioned, psychological well-being, health, education, cultural diversity and resilience, community, those are all really important factors that should be priorities for the government anyway. By having this framework, this specifically attaches policies to parts of the Gross National Happiness Index, and I think that's something a lot of other countries could learn from, because it makes it a little bit easier sell politically when you're drawing that direct connection, saying, you know, look, the reason we're investing in education is because, you know, we looked in the 2016 results, education was positively correlated with happiness. And so we want to do this. This is, you know, not just because we think that everyone should be educated, though that still is a good reason. But it's also saying that, you know, we have a lot of evidence from this survey that it's going to improve people's lives and the perception of their situation.
On that note, has the country's GNH increased since it was first introduced in the 70s?
Well, there was a slight increase if you look at the surveys in 2010 and 2015. You had a slight increase. I heard you reference this report, this UN report before, that lists Bhutan somewhere in the, 96th place or 97th place in terms of happiness around the world. So it's hard to say. You know, so much of this is a big research challenge, something we face all the time. When you're using a survey methodology, you know, you as a researcher, there are a lot of concerns about bias that, you know, if you're asking, you're the one asking the question, you might ask it in a way that telegraphs a certain answer. Or in this case, for the survey respondents, everybody in Bhutan is aware of this, right? So they're not just answering purely independently, and the only thing they're thinking about is, you know, the literal answer to a question. They also have the context that, you know, this is going to impact the ultimate score for the entire country. So has it changed a lot? Hard to say. You know, as I mentioned before, I think a comparative assessment, either over time or between countries, that can still be tough. So I think there's still a lot to be proud about, even just from the exercise of conducting this assessment.
Just stepping back and taking a look at the bigger picture, then, does having a GNH make Bhutan a happier country?
Yeah, well, I would argue it does, and we don't know the big problem we have in our work is the unobserved counterfactual. We don't know what the world looks like where for the last 40 years Bhutan has not had this concept, right? I think that there is a lot of evidence to support the fact that once you start organizing policy around these different metrics, and once you start getting the country to think about the national progress in terms of happiness rather than economic activity, I think that you've succeeded.
Can the GNH be applied in other countries, or have we seen other countries adopt similar approaches?
Well, I think you're going to see it applied in other countries pretty soon. You look in advanced economies where growth has been very low for the last 10 years. And in the past, it was a really nice metric where you had, you know, 3% annual growth, and it was pretty evenly spread. And it really was a better metric for how society was doing and how people's lives were improving over time. In a low growth environment with increasing inequality, just measuring economic output doesn't really tell you that much about, you know, how people's livelihoods. Are people optimistic about the future? Do they feel secure? Do they think that their children's lives will be better than their lives? And I think you're going to start seeing that a lot more, particularly after we come out of our current calamity in advanced economies, that shift. Another interesting example to consider is China, where you've had an even more extreme case where, you know, for averaging double-digit growth for 30 years, and we're seeing that. We've seen that growth slow down in China over the last few years now. But with COVID, this is an unprecedented year for economic growth or lack thereof in modern China. And China's leaders have, in particular, emphasized GDP growth. They've had these targets that they have consistently met. They've always been high. They've been getting lower, but still we're talking about 6-7% growth the last few years. I think on the backside of this crisis, this could be a very interesting time for China's leaders to make the case that, you know, we have just gone through the crucible of this pandemic, and, you know, we're coming out the other side, a changed country. China is obviously in a much different position today than it was 30 years ago, and it might be time to start measuring these pillars of happiness that Bhutan has done so well.
Right. So on that note, considering that we might see priorities shift even more towards well-being and happiness if and when this pandemic is resolved, what would this entail in terms of national development and progress then?
Well, I think if you got publics to think about national development and progress in a more holistic way, going beyond economic growth, and even going beyond personal income, while we're at it, and looked at these nine different domains, I think what you would see is more robust, more holistic policy at the national level. And essentially, you know, I think you look around the world, there are very few places where, you know, the national governments are adequately funding health, education, ecological diversity, you name it. You know, I struggle to come up with an example of a place that's doing this, you know, almost too well, right? But if those start to become the metrics of national success, I think you're going to see closing of the gap, and you're going to see a lot more investment in some frankly neglected policy areas that we badly need investment in, and that applies to advanced economies, developing economies, and some of the least developed economies like Bhutan.
Michael, thanks for talking happiness with us today.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
You too. That was Michael Frank, Senior Analyst of Public Policy at the Economist Intelligence Unit, speaking to us about Bhutan's gross national happiness. You can let us know how are you finding moments of happiness at this point. Call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio.
This International Day of Happiness special was brought to you by UEM Sunrise. Find your happy.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.